copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
I've changed slightly to strategic partnership in global mission. Building strategic partnership was the topic that Jörn had. I changed it slightly just to make sure it was possible for me to add to it exactly what I feel I can add from my background and position. And I've been a general secretary for a number of years in a Norwegian mission organization. At the time being, I'm at this university college called NLA, which is based on the west coast of Bergen, a Christian university college with 2,000 students. Also, beside of having a strategic leadership role, trying to do some missiological work as well. Let's start with an opening question. That's for each and every one of you. If you just sit down and think for a while, in five words, try to tell to yourself, this is partnership. This is what I understand with partnership. Write it down. So I'm not asking for what is in the Oxford Dictionary, but what is in the dictionary of your head. Rolf and Thomas, where did you end? Yeah, one of you.
We talked about equality, but that's also difficult to define because the one with the money is often strongest. But in some way, it needs to be both parties need to have an agreement or understanding that they are both recipients and donors. There is not a donor and a recipient when it comes to partnership.
William, can you do it in fewer words?
What I said shared with my brother here was mutual responsibility for a specific activity.
Yeah. Six words, fine. One of the ladies, okay. One of the ladies back here.
Yeah, when we meet the same goal, like, you know, it's very easy to find, like, a partnership, and if, especially this particular missionary, they're working many, many years in this field, it is easy to combine ours with this.
To give you a good parallel, I think partnership comes from the word partner. So this is, I guess, implements itself that you need to have partnering, equality, and truth, and, you know, same focus, and etc.
Thank you. Very important. Hank, in the end.
Marriage with a purpose beyond.
Once
marriage
more.
Marriage with a purpose beyond. That's five words.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. When I looked this up for illustrations for it, it was striking that a whole number of the illustrations when you Google a word like partnership are about hands. Most of them, I would say, about hands. Shaking hands, making some sort of a network with hands, building with hands, laying hands upon was on some of them as well. Telling us something about an impression of partnership as a relational, I would say. Something to do with human beings. Something to do with coming to agreements with each other. And then the second thing that struck me while looking into internet is the same as Yevgeny used. A whole lot of jigsaw puzzles being combined, like you have down here as well. And the last one I saw was a number of chains, telling us something about being held together, knit together, and not that and that partnership is never stronger than its weakest link, which is important, of course, in partnership thinking. And I also think that you say that partnership, and we can even take it further down and say partner, which must derive from part, saying that each and every one of us are only parts. We are parts of a bigger whole, which I find very important. These questions about partnership and collaboration, and there are different words of it, but partnership and connections, global connections, for those of us who have been to gatherings with Evangelical Alliance or with the Lausanne Movement or here as well, last year Phil Butler was here, he is everywhere when we talk about connections, because he works on global connections. And this is a very hot topic, actually, in missiology. While coming to a document like the Cape Town Commitment, one of the six strategic questions in the end, in the second half of the Cape Town Commitment, is about partnership. It's this one, number 2F, partnering in the body of Christ for unity in mission. And with these subtitles, Unity in the Church, Partnership and Global Mission, Men and Women in Partnership, and Theological Education and Mission. And we will dig into number two of these today. But also for the first one, I would say that is very important because it lays the foundation about the thinking about partnership. We can talk about partnership with problematizing it. We can use the problematic language on partnership. Oh, do we need to have partnership? Can't we do it on our own? No, we can't. Because the Church of Christ is one body, and we stand united in the mission that Jesus Christ gave his church. So it is the whole church that is given the whole gospel to go through the whole world, the whole church. So, but then there is something of a gospel in it, because it goes back to the unity, not that we only have with each other, but the unity that we have in Christ. So our partnership should mirror, so to say, the unity that we have in Jesus Christ. So it's not an option. It's mandatory to think about partnership. And it's not only for the opening phase of a relationship. While building a relationship, you have got a lasting relationship. And the contents of the relationship might differ over the years and over the generations, but there is a lasting relationship once a partnership is established. That is some of the main thing which is said with in the Cape Town Commitment about unity in church. But then let's go to what it says about the global mission. He says that we stand together as a church, so and so and so, with equality of opportunities to contribute together. And let us lay aside suspicion, competition, and pride, and be willing to learn. And while listening to Scott yesterday about the different models around in the world, I'm sorry to say, it struck me in a moment here, wow, do they think like that? How can we teach them to think otherwise? Then, in a few seconds, I just realized that, okay, that was a wrong thought. Because, of course it is, how can we learn from each other all the way? There is a model from Harold Fuller, I think it's from around 1980, about the development of church-mission relations. It might even be said to relate to an older pattern of mission, church relationships. Because I think when we go out in new relations today in mission, either coming from the western or the eastern side, this is not the way it starts even. But the older pattern of mission started like this, and it has somehow an idealized ending here, because I don't find it always like that. But okay, let's just go through it, because we shall use it in a moment. It's from Harold Fuller. He says that the phases of the development in church and mission relations, very much will have started with a pioneering phase, of course. And then you have the mission, and the mission being alone. Starting up, maybe we didn't have a partner. That is different from starting up today, from the 19th century up till today. There will be a big difference, because we will have potential partners all over. They didn't. So we had a pioneering phase where the mission stood by and large alone. Then we enter the parenthood phase, which tended to become too long, I would say, at least from my experience within our mission organization, where the church, so to say, was the baby of the mission. And we entered into the next phase, which is called the partner phase, the partnering phase, where the church and the mission, idealistically at least, should stand together as equals in a partnership. And then in the end, we came out with the participant role, where the mission or the church said bid a farewell to the mission, or the mission to the church. They split up somehow, but still there was a relation, should be a relation, of the church being there, the mission being there for the church, and even the church being there for the mission, because there is a lasting relation. Well, this is an old pattern, and we'll have a look into it in a moment, while I will say something about what we experienced, not least in Asia. But just let me come to... I got Jörns, who should have this session, his PowerPoint presentation, and I picked two of his pictures because he says something about the necessity of changing how we think about partnership. Because this is a very traditional way. He has been a missionary to Ethiopia for many years, and this has been a traditional way of thinking about partnership. We have an African church which should be helped, and around that church there are a whole lot of partners. Stronger partners, weaker partners, not always as many as this, but a whole lot of partners around the church. But he says that we need to change the pattern of thinking, because this will be a sort of helping activity towards the church all the time. The church must be helped and helped and helped, and a whole lot of supporters around the church to help it. And you get this paternalistic way of thinking and behaving. And he says we should rather have a kingdom-related way of thinking partnership, like the chain which I showed on the second picture. And the African church is one of the links in that chain for building God's kingdom. So there will be a phase where some of these links are weaker than the others. But the goal all the time must be that we see all the churches and mission agencies as partner for the same kingdom mission, building God's kingdom, which I found like a helpful way of thinking it from your side, your own side. Okay, just some Asian examples, because the organization where I have been working, we have a long-standing relation to some Asian countries, but a shorter history with some other of them. We have been in India, and we helped them forming a Lutheran church up in the northern part, northeastern part of India. And I often asked myself during my years in ministry, it is a lifetime relation, but are we lifetime friends, or is it a lifetime asymmetry? Because it seemed to me like 1867, that was the time when we started up. And still they are so dependent, we feel at least, on us. Is this how it needs to be with these long-standing relations. I think this is not some of the problem with some of the long-standing relations. It's hard to break up, and if we break up, what will happen then? Will it fall together? Like a whole lot of things have done, of course. And a whole lot of institutions that we run in India, they are no more. They couldn't be because the church is not strong enough to carry them. But does it need to be a lifetime asymmetric relation? Okay, let's go to India, the neighboring countries, where we are in cooperation with three different churches. With two of the churches, they're old churches, and we have been into it for a very long time. And we have managed to withdraw very much from the church, the daily life of the churches, and the running of the churches, because they should be old enough to stand on their own feet. And then we are in with some social work in the area, so of a couple of these churches. But they follow the old pattern, nevertheless, which we saw from Harold Fuller. I'm not quite sure where we are in those phases. I hope we are about to become participants. But it's been a hard time due to buildings, institutions, and fight over this in the churches, and we have had to be into it so that they should not fight each other to death in the churches over all the values that we have left behind us. But then, a few years ago, we came in touch with a third church in Bangladesh, and I can't say exactly where it is. I know where it is. I've been there. But it's a sensitive area. But this church in Bangladesh is a younger church. They've never had an international partner. And we approached this church and we asked, how can we be partners in mission? And they told us the first day, we're not interested in your money. We want to raise money for the salaries of our evangelists, missionaries, pastors, ourselves. They're poor. They're poor people. Financed by this a handful of rice way of thinking. And we don't want one single Norwegian kroner to raise buildings, church buildings. We want to raise them ourselves. Okay, then what do you need us for? What do you need us for? Okay, how can we pray for each other? How can we exchange information about the spiritual situation in our churches? How can we exchange information about our mission initiatives? And then, of course, they were in need of doing something more in the social area. So they asked us, you can come in with some money, not too much, some money in some of these social projects. With schools and that sort of things. Raising up scholarships so the poor children can go to school, for example. That is our partnership. And this is the church calling to our office week by week by week saying, what shall we pray for the next week? That is also a sort of... We were never pioneer. We were never parent. We are a partner somehow. And we will remain a partner. Because there is a deeper unity, which is not about the money. Nepal, Bhutan, I could mention something about them as well. Nepal, United Mission to Nepal. We are involved there. A whole lot of organizations are involved there. We were not allowed to do any evangelistic or church-like work in Nepal. Until in the 90s, and even then, we should be very careful about doing it. But then it was more possible for the churches to be public in their witness. But we've been there with some social work, and we have seen the churches grow. And then this big organization, United Mission to Nepal, had to start thinking about their own future. We shall leave it to the church here in this country. But we have started a whole lot of big hospitals. And the big Christian hospital on Patan in Kathmandu, it could not be left with the church. It was too big, so it was left with the state. As for us in Bhutan, we were in Bhutan for 30 years, eradicating leprosy. We built up two hospitals. There were only a few handful of Christians at the time in Bhutan. We couldn't leave the hospitals to them, and it was not allowed to be a Christian. So anyway, it was not possible. So we built up those hospitals. We left them to the government, but then it came back to us later that we had a good relationship with the government. So now, the later years after we have withdrawn our people from Bhutan, we also are in relation to the country, and we also are in close relation to some of the Christians in the country doing Bible translation work, that sort of stuff. But we must be very sensitive in staying abroad, in staying away from the country. We should not be there with our missionaries. It's a much more healthier sort of relation than the old relation which we struggle so much with coming away from. Cambodia, let me take that as a last example. We started up in Cambodia in 2006. I was there several times in 2004 and 5, and I discussed with the leader of the Evangelical Alliance in the country, at the time at least, Heng Cheng. Heng Cheng is a brilliant guy. And I asked him after one of our talks, Heng Cheng, now we need to know from you, I need to hear from you. Do you need us in Cambodia? Is there any way we can come in and be a partner with you here in Cambodia? And he said, like a people from many countries in Africa never would say, I shall think about it. I shall think about it. I loved it. I loved it while he said it. And I come back the other day, the next day, and asked Heng Cheng, have you thought about it? And then he said to me, yes, you're welcome to Cambodia if you want to keep our pace. If you want to keep our pace. And that was the starting point of our relation. And I have wondered many times since that, did we follow his advice? Well enough. I'm not quite sure we did. But we are there, and we try to follow this very wise advice about keeping our pace. Okay, now I want you to break into groups of four. And share about these two questions. Your experience, share with each other experiences that you have had of asymmetric relations in the field of cross-cultural partnership in mission, and how you worked on coming to terms with them. How has your organization, church, worked on preventing unhealthy dependency on mission church partnerships? I want one testimony from each side of the room to share one example of an experience of asymmetric relation, how you worked on it. Hank, you are a very experienced man. Have you shared something with the group?
I've learned something from our Hungarian. I was part of a church movement which was founded by American missionaries in Hungary in the last 25 years. And during these 25 years, a big group of Hungarians grew up and grew mature in their faith. So I felt that the whole issue which is coming now is almost like in a family when a kid growing up, and there is this pain at one point when the relationship cannot be as it was. But we love each other, but we need to somehow look at each other more like partners. And I think our church is in the middle of that phase. And some missionaries from that organization can handle well, some not. Altogether, as a mission organization, I doubt that they ever thought about this, how this should happen, or they gave a thought that this situation can come. And we felt that the way how to deal with this is mainly for us to take responsibility, almost like in a family, that you act, grow up, and it makes your parents easier to take you as an adult. Mm-hmm. So we feel that we try to act and grow up and not talking about rights and talking about that we know enough and we know that much and or we know better, but taking the responsibility of acting mature leaders so this is the way.
Thank you so much. Mika, have you any experiences from the Finnish mission on the second question? How has your organization worked on preventing unhealthy dependency?
Yes, for example, there was a slide from the Mekane Yesus church from Ethiopia. 40 years ago, for example, 30 years ago, we just sent in missionaries. Everybody was welcome. Now, we are in a new situation because we want to hear them what they want. But we want the doctors to our seminary. We want that kind of people. They are. We are not telling them that we want to send this woman or a man or a missionary to you. Please find a place. But they are saying us that what we want you. Please try to find somebody. And for me, it has been very important to notice that we in Finland, my mission needs Mekane Yesus Church more than they
exactly
as us. Especially when they say that they are regularly praying for us, they want to support our mission organization, not financially, but spiritually. And I think we need more them now than they need.
Which is very true, especially for us up in the northern part of the Lutheran Europe. And Mekane Yesus is today a church with 6.5 million members. Very vital, spiritually vital and lively. And they know how to address us. And that is good, which is very good. They're bold enough. Thank you so much. That you have shared with each other, so we just limited to this sharing now. A little bit about partner and power, because partnership contains power. And we have a wish that there should be equality, but is that reality? Not always, at least. First, we have two. There are two bullet points. We have a history of paternalism from the Western side. There's no discussion. But have we left that phase? I guess we have some cultural attitudes as well. Like I thought when Scott talked yesterday about, oh, they should learn from us. And so we have a way to go. At least from the Western side, to think, what can we learn from each other? Dr. Vashira, who was the General Secretary of Focus Kenya while I worked with the Norwegian IFES movement 15 years ago, we tried to build up a partnership with them, and we managed to do. But the first time when I talked to Dr. Vashira down in Kenya, I said, can you send some of your best people to come and be a student team in Norway from Focus Kenya? He said to me, I don't want any sort of ethnic exhibition in Norway. And I said, no, that's not the issue, Dr. Vashira said. But when I've been in East Africa and I've seen your prayer life, and I've seen how easily you share the testimony of Jesus Christ with others. We need to be ignited by your prayer life and your zeal for the gospel. Maybe we can give you something back on organization and on parts of leadership building so we can form a partnership. But we need you. It's important to say we need you because you have the resources. Then we have these two bullet points: money, wealth. We all understand that money is it's power. It's so much power in money, and in coming from the financially rich part of the world, on which Norway is nearby the top. So we all understand that might be a problem, but is it a problem only to be a charitable donor? Do you put yourself into a situation of being the one who should be cherished and they should be grateful for you? You should meet in a room and sign a paper of thankfulness. Of course we should. We are polite people. But the attitude, the Western attitude, what does it demand to be a donor? Do we demand from others to be grateful back? How is that? There is power in being a charitable donor. And also the academic educational level, the mastering of several languages, the educational system of the Western world. It gives us power. It gives us power. And there are pitfalls. And we saw that in the last session with Yevgeny on several points. This is also addressed in the Lausanne or in the Cape Town commitment. Money, of course, frequently corrupts and divides. We should not operate on the principle that those who have the most money have all the decision-making power. And then also to the attitudes, let us no longer impose our preferred names, slogans, strategies, methods. We are so good at methods in the West. Let us instead work for true mutuality, for interdependence, for the respect and dignity. This is a great document. This really is a great document. Go home and read it again. So this is focused like this with the Lausanne in Cape Town document. Okay, the last thing we shall do is this. I think we stop there. Turn to each other in groups. Doesn't need to be as many as you are. 1 minute, 2 minutes, discuss about ideas that how we can avoid imposing our preferences on our partners.
Okay, I am actually going to speak only for about 3 minutes and just tell you a story, and the story will then give you a framework of the questions and how the questions we want you to talk about, and the rest of the time will be in discussion groups. And when we first moved over to Ukraine in 1995, we had a really good relationship with a local church there. And it's not only a local church, but it was an organization of churches. Yvonne knows them well. It's New Life Church in Kiev. And when we moved over, on paper, our mission agency, which has changed names 3 times in the last 15 years, now it's Reach Global. It's the mission of the Evangelical Free Church of America. At that time, on paper, the idea of partnerships and decision-making was called field-driven. It was the decisions were made on the field, and we rejoiced in that. When it came to the partnership, and we had talked about partnership at different levels with New Life Church, we were told that we could not partner with them by our home office in Minneapolis. And so it really did. It caused a lot of disappointment for us because we thought it was field-driven. And we know who they are. We know their qualities. We know everything about them that, you know, why we want to partner with them. So we said we were only allowed to partner with them at a certain level. And that partnership resulted in them doing things for us and us doing things for them. One of the things they did for us was provide visa coverage. And they did that well, and they did that faithfully. One of the things that we did for them was we provided three EFCA churches from the U.S. to come and be partner churches with churches in their association in Ukraine, in different cities in Ukraine. And those ended up being very good relationships, and we worked together on what those look like. But the question that I want to put before you today, and I want you to spend the rest of the time talking about, is this. What are the central thoughts, ideas, which drive the partnership strategy of your organization? What are the central thoughts and ideas that drive the partnership strategy of your organization? And then, how have you seen those be beneficial? And how have you seen those be less beneficial, seeing some of the shortfalls of those approaches? Okay, if I could have your attention real quick. I have some other questions that I want you to talk about. What are some of the wins? What are some of the losses? And then what did you learn about partnerships from those wins and losses? And just to follow up a little bit with that story I told you about from 15 years ago, even though we were told, it's almost 20 years ago now, even though we were told we can't partner with that organization at that level, we maintained a relationship with those people, with those churches, with the pastor. And just in the last probably 3 or 4 years since we moved to Budapest, this pastor and his family, when they're driving through from Ukraine through Budapest to Austria, have spent the night with us. So over the last 3 years, we've had them in our home. We've kept the relationship up with them. I was in Kiev about a month ago. And the whole idea that I'm trying to convey is that even though there was not a technical partnership at the level that we thought we wanted, we did keep up some level of partnership with them, but we kept up a personal relationship with them. And now we're back to now our mission agency gives us full freedom to define how we partner, with whom we partner, to what extent we partner with. And now we're back where we were 20 years ago talking about partnering with them.